This is a Momentum Media production.
Nerd alert!
Property Nerds, the home for data-driven property investors, where we uncover Australia's hot and cold markets, latest headlines and trends.
Welcome back to another episode of the Property Nerds. I'm Arjun Paliwal, your co-host here with Lee Paliwal from Hills Finance, your co-host. And today we're going to be chatting all things finance trends and self-managed super funds, or SMSF. So if you hear us use the word SMSF a lot, you know what it stands for, self-managed super funds. But also, you probably hear us muck up on the SMSF too because of how much we say it in this conversation. So with today's episode, I guess before we dive into it, if you missed last episode, that was an unreal conversation. I got to chat with Simon from the Demographics Group, who many people may know. He's the co-founder of the Demographics Group and there with Bernard Sold. And they know people, they know demographics, they know trends of the future, they know the trends of the past that are shaping the future globally and locally. And the hot topic that we had a request for was the aging population. So that was the last episode. But then if you haven't checked it out, please do go check it out. In terms of today's episode, it's another hot topic. We thought we'd, you know, save the white paper discussion for next episode. And in today's episode, we'd go all in on self-managed super funds. So Lee, before we get into the self-managed super funds, I know everyone's keen to hear about the finance. Over to you on the finance front. What's happening there?
Fantastic. Well, as we all know, so ABS lending indicators are 2 months behind. So the February 24 data has come out. So starting with housing finance and total housing, this actually rose by 1.5%. And this is after a fall of 0.8% in January. And that's actually 13.3% higher compared to a year ago in terms of total housing. So that's interesting. Even while interest rates have been rising over the last 12 months, total housing has gone up higher. So in terms of the breakdown, so for owner-occupied housing, this rose by 1.6%, and this is 9.1% higher compared to a year ago. And investor housing rose by 1.2%, and that was 21.5% higher to a year ago.
So investors are back.
Yeah.
And investors are hugely leading a charge. That's massive.
Huge like lead from investors.
21.5.
But like last month, like last podcast, I covered it off. Not everything was going in the upwards trend. Everything is higher in terms of total housing, which is interesting.
Yeah, everything is back. Yeah. So 2024 is back with a huge surge. And guys, interest rates have not gone down yet. And yet the finance data continues to strengthen. Another example, we've talked about this in many episodes before, of the difference between credit supply and credit demand. Credit supply is substantially lower than what it was, but credit demand is returning with huge strength, has always been above averages, but now it's returning with huge strength, especially with this increases. And what's happening on the space of refinancing, Lee?
I was just gonna say before that is it's interesting that even with the interest rate hikes that's happened, what would the reverse be if we didn't have any interest rate hikes? What would that mean? I guess, potentially with the data for 12 months ago.
It would have been massive because I think firstly, like there's a few components, right? There's obviously the economic strength, which is partial alignment, not partially, heavily aligned with the interest rates that are rising. And as a result, that economic strength that was happening and the low supply in Australia would have meant even more strength in finance.
Yeah.
But now, even with 30 to 40% lower borrowing capacity, people are still going, no, I need to, or I want to, based on both investors and owner-occupiers, owner-occupier from the shelter piece, the need, and then investors from the want with building wealth. And they're both ramping up, as you can see from those numbers.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, did the RBA foresee that potentially? Hence, we had those rate increases. So that's why they've gone ahead with those rate increases over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I think they keep lending and housing a little bit away from their remit, from what they look at. They obviously monitor it, but they don't try and put it as their reasons for. What they've really tied it to is the inflation data sets that have been coming out. But nonetheless, like I'm sure they'd be surprised to some extent as well with the amount of lending take up that's happening, even in this high heightened interest rate environment.
Correct. Yeah, it's very interesting to see now that's coming through. So in terms of February 24 data for the value of external refinancing, so total housing rose by 3%, and that was 17.9% lower compared to 1 year ago. So for owner-occupied housing, this rose by 3.5%, and that was 22.9% lower compared to a year ago. And for investor housing, this rose 2.1%, and that was 7.2% lower compared to a year ago. This is expected. Obviously, when the rates get much lower, this is going to entice all your existing borrowers to go and refinance to save on interest rates and all that. So that was an expected trend to see followed on from last month.
Yeah, I think also with those refinance trends, Lee, what they showed us is that this time last year, right, it's come back a little bit now, but the this time last year piece, that was so heightened because interest rates were just starting to increase or about to increase around that time. And I think during that time, it appears that people were obviously much more freely able to take out their money and start refinancing, start moving money around. And what I noticed as well is that when interest rates were increasing, usually it's a moment of time where people want to look at their refinancing and look at the best rates. It kind of reminds me of the refinance boom that occurred when COVID first hit as well. So we've seen at the interest rate time, COVID time, what it's starting to show is that I think a learning lesson for everyone moving forward in times of uncertainty and in times of the unknown and in times of what we call the black swan events as well. Australians don't just sit there and go, oh, I'm done, cross their arms and lie in a coffin and go, hey, yep, let's go. We're out of here. Like, this ain't working for me. See you later, housing. See you later, my family home. See you later, everything. All my investments. Catch you later. Like, those are the extreme minorities that you hear the sad stories for. Majority of people, what they do is they go, okay, breathe. What are we going to do? What can we tweak? What can we change? What are we doing about the incomings? What are we doing about the outgoings? And also, what are we doing with our loan? I will go to where gives me the best rate. I will go to where unlocks my equity and gives me buffer. We're equity rich here in Australia with a 25% roughly loan to value ratio of the country's asset values. So don't look at all this debt.
When you put it that way.
Absolutely, right? Don't look at all this debt. Don't look at all these numbers and think this is scary and crazy and the interest rates are going to crush everyone or COVID's going to crush everyone. What we've got to learn is that Australians are very proactive about their finance when times get tough or when things get thrown at them. And as a result, they look at the total picture and they made changes. This is why refinances have boomed now on two occasions, interest rates and COVID. And you can best believe that a trend will happen, not from a just like what we've seen in the past, but just now noting this human psychology piece. Every time things happen in the future that shake up Australia, it's quite clear that you will see us all come together and figure out what is it that we do to protect our home, protect our wealth growth, protect our future, our retirement, our kids' futures, and more. So it's a big learning lesson for me in the mindset piece that people carry when they build wealth or look at their family and how they act on it. And data is very telling here that this is how they've acted on it in both those periods of time. So big learning for everyone in future. Do not expect bad event, review it, think that this is now coming for everyone. People will be proactive. And that's what's clearly shown here in the past.
Also, like, we're both Kiwis, right? So we come from New Zealand. And if we're talking about mindset, the mindset of Australians versus New Zealand for property is phenomenal. I think, like, a big difference in some set. Like, we have a lot more flexibility with lending, even with these challenges of increasing interest rates. Like you said, when as Australians, you're not going to put it on hold, your wealth creation journey or your home buying journey, because of these rate increases. It's what other fat can we cut to make it work kind of thing. I find, like, us personally being from New Zealand, because we hear other stories in New Zealand, it's like, oh, well, you're kind of knocked out of the ballpark if there's changes with interest rates, because they have so much different lending hurdles to get through. Like, for investors,
like 40% or something in LVR, yeah, for loan to value ratios. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right?
So much higher deposits required.
40% deposit. Sorry. That's the one.
Yeah. 40% deposits required. Same, if not 1% higher interest rates across the board. So it's, yeah. I mean, that's why we love Australia, right?
So. Yeah, it's definitely tougher for the Kiwis there back in New Zealand. We've seen their housing markets in the recent data sets by CoreLogic have some serious declines, actually. They've just got so many challenges there. They've got the same supply issues that we have, the same demand side issues that are very strong at a macroeconomic and a country level. But then all of a sudden, the earnings are less. The house prices are just as much, if not more, in many cities in relative terms.
Yep. From Wellington and same price as Sydney over there.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I mean, the loan-to-value ratios are worse. The lending stricter. The interest rates are higher. And the cost of goods are higher. It's like they've really got some stuff there to look at, but still a very resilient
macro scale. You can see the difference in mindset. Yeah. And with that being said, I guess, like, obviously the 30 to 40% decrease in people's borrowing capacities over the last 12 or so months has created ways for Aussies to look at different ways to continue their property wealth journey. And one thing that we're seeing a lot through Hills Finance and just clients that come through and reach out to us is taking advantage of lending through their SMSF. Or purchasing through the SMSF. So there's a lot of people we find are first-time purchasers through their SMSF. It's very rare. I would say probably 30% have existing SMSF and they're looking to go for a second or third. Quite often, a lot of the SMSF transactions we've been seeing over the last 12 months are new entities that have been established. So the reason that is, and I've covered this off in previous podcasts before, but essentially when you're borrowing through an SMSF entity, you essentially have a second wind in terms of your borrowing capacity. It is completely looked at separate from any liabilities or assets that you have in your personal name or personal entities. What that means is if you have three investment properties or four investment properties where most investors get capped out in your personal names or personal company entities, you can go and establish an SMSF if it's right for you to do so. And essentially, that entity of the SMSF is looked at solely by itself for borrowing potential. So looking at the potential rental income that you're getting on the property that you may be purchasing, plus any super contributions you are making to that SMSF, whether it's through yourself making contributions if you're self-employed or your employer contributing to the SMSF. Hence, you get that second wind. And if you're purchasing first time through the SMSF, well, then you wouldn't have any liabilities or loans through that entity. Or if you're going in for a second or third or whichever another subsequent purchase through SMSF, then it's only those loans that are being taken into account as liabilities for your borrowing capacity. So it's something that we've been seeing a lot and something I wanted to cover off in today's podcast around what you need to do to prepare yourself when establishing an SMSF or wanting to borrow through your SMSF and what requirements may be looked at when you're looking to do that across multiple lenders or majority of lenders.
Yeah, it's a really good point you bring up, Lee, because we've noticed a surge in inquiries specifically for SMSF coming
up. That's right.
And I can start to see why, because people are looking at that second wind of borrowing. But also, you know, when we actually started noticing this, Lee, at InvestorKit, it was COVID. As soon as COVID hit and the months following, the 6 to 12 months following, like the change in people's control in like what they wanted control on. I mean, it makes sense, right? The whole world shut down your livelihood, your social, recreational life, your mental health, your financial, your physical health, obviously as well. All of these things had shocks and changes and worries. And then people lost control. And I feel like that was one of the biggest things that we've been hearing about how many people want to take control because they just don't know what will happen next in the world, where things will go. And as a result, people just want to be able to go and say, hey, look, I want to decide what I do with my retirement. Now, guys, just as you're hearing this, it's important to look at this and go, you know, it's not to say that SMSF is right for you. Like you still should go and get a financial planner and get that advice. So everything we're saying here isn't from a, you know, personal advice for anyone tuning in. It's more from a general sense what we're seeing and what we commonly see. And then if, you know, from a perspective of your financial planners and accountants feel like it's right for you and you'd like a helping hand, then Lee is just one email away at lee.paliwal@hillsfinance.com.au. So from an SMSF lending, the setups and things and starting that journey. But Lee, I know you wanted to go deeper into the SMSFs. I'll hand it back over to you.
Yeah, so it's obviously a separate entity that needs to be set up. And yes, you do need to speak to a financial advisor or your accountant to ensure, firstly, an SMSF is going to suit your needs or requirements, but then also go through the process of setting that up for you. So there's an SMSF entity that's set up, and then that SMSF entity would be part of a trust, essentially, in order to go and purchase the property. So like I mentioned, in terms of the borrowing position, how it's looked at is purely the assets and liabilities for that SMSF in isolation would be looked at. So the property that you're looking to purchase or existing properties that you have through that SMSF as part of your balance sheet, obviously any rental incomes being received for that property or to be purchased property, obviously the SMSF balance that you have. So really the absolute minimum balance in your SMSF or current superannuation, if you're considering going down the SMSF route, you're really looking at 130K minimum, absolute minimum.
And some financial planners on that might want you to have 200 or 250.
Yeah.
Seek their good guidance and advice.
Correct.
When setting this up. This is just the minimum from what we've seen set up and
property. Exactly right. So that's like an absolute. For you to even think about this, you'd be hovering around that balance, and you can start engaging in conversations with your financial advisor and accountant from there. So people like to do it on their own for their own SMSF, or they do it with their partners and combine their balances, really up to the advice of your financial advisor at that point. And then obviously the property type. So you can actually purchase both residential and commercial properties through your SMSF. So a lot of people obviously have done their thing with residential property in their personal names and they want to continue that, but you may be able to explore commercial assets at the same time as well.
Now, on the commercial front, what I would say is that when balances, what we typically see is that sort of 400K and above on commercial balances. And that's only because of the types of properties we search for in commercial and what people are after.
Yeah.
Things that are 3 years or more tenanted, 5.5 to 7% net yields, mm-hmm. markets that we feel really, you know, bullish about. And obviously industrial, medical, these sorts of things have been really popular of late. But when I'm looking at it, I find that 400K plus on a superannuation balance is what we've seen typically from clients that have used our services.
Yes.
In SMSF commercial. If it's less than that, it's not that it's not possible, but we just usually have search times and asset types and things looked at a little bit differently.
Yeah. And it would also correlate to lending requirements. Like if you're borrowing for a residential property through your SMSF, lenders could lend you to 70 to 80% loan to value ratio, whereas commercial, you're really hovering around that 60 to 70% loan to value ratio, which obviously means higher deposit of about 30% plus costs. So there's always also that to factor in. And so, yeah, as I mentioned, not just residential, commercial as well. In terms of documentation involved, like I said, it's a complete separate entity. So obviously, if you've got your SMSF established, looking at the trust deed for the trust of that SMSF company that's been set up, the balance of the super being transferred across. If you're buying a brand new property, looking at the proposed rental income for that property or existing rental income if it's already tenanted. And then literally pay slips that show what your employer or what you're contributing into that SMSF. And if you don't have any existing properties, there's no other really paperwork other than lender application forms or showing loan balances through statements if you did have an existing assets through that SMSF. So a lot of brokers, I don't know why, seem to put SMSF lending in the hard basket. I seem to think that it's the opposite, because really it's less paperwork involved if you're brand new to the SMSF or you're only on your second property or so. So, and yeah, it's really much the same process as a home loan application in a personal name or personal entity. But I guess sometimes the turnaround times are a bit longer, you know, a bit longer than with a residential lending through the personal name with the lenders. But yeah.
Leon, in terms of the SMSF, when you're helping clients, what do the timelines look like, just to make sure people know the variances between personal lending and SMSF lending? So what could firstly, timeline look like when an SMSF is set up and it's all done and they come to you for lending in terms of getting approval?
Yeah.
That'd be the first one.
Yeah, so the first part is a lot of the major lenders backed out of SMSF lending. So you'd really be dealing with second or third tier lenders for SMSF lending.
Well, I love that. We're going to smash that word so much. Oh, hey, SMSF.
Did it and like then, 10 times. Yeah.
She so, sells seashells on the seashore. That's it.
So with that being said, if a CDA is 1 to 2 days turnaround for your normal applications, but you're dealing with a second tier or third tier lender for SMSF lending, you're not going to be getting the same turnarounds anyways, right? Because of that less manpower and the credit team and all that kind of stuff. Really 5 to 10 business days, depending on the lender, on average is what you're looking at. So because you're going through the process of establishing the trust and all that, I mean, that's not even included in the application process, but it must to be done, right? Before we submit.
Imagining all those are done and like people give you the documents and they're ready to go. What are turnaround times for SMSF like lenders these days?
Yeah, 5 to 10 business days, depending.
Okay, cool, cool. What I would say just from people who are looking and then they decide to purchase is that your relationship with your accountant and financial planner is critical as well, because if you are, say, have the advice to go ahead and you now want to set it up and want to purchase property, you have to be very descriptive that you're purchasing an SMSF property when dealing with sales agents. And it's something our team regularly does, because we tell them, hey, a bare trust needs to be set up. It can be 2 to 3 days sometimes until we give you all the entity details to go on contract as per the accountant's guidance or the financial planner's guidance. And so if you're not using a buyer's agent and you're trying to purchase property with SMSF, it's important to give that guidance to the sales agent in discussions that you're purchasing through that entity. They love hearing that, because then they know timelines and management of expectations with their vendor, so they can communicate, because there is, even after offer acceptance, a few days that it can take for entity setup. So you have the right details sometimes for certain accountants and planners, the way they work to go onto a contract of sale. And what that does is just important in your deal management when you're talking to sales agents. So this is if you're not dealing with a buyer's agent. If you're dealing with a buyer's agent like our team, we obviously always make sure that's known to sales agents. But the reason why sales agents love that is that A, the communication piece, but B, they also know that SMSF lending, if someone's usually getting that, it's a high strength, like the applications are usually high confidence. And so when they're high confidence, they feel pretty good when they work with you in that journey.
And tip from a lending point of view before you dive ahead is essentially you can be pre-approved without the bare trust being established. So a bare trust can only be established once the property is found. You can submit all other documentation to the lender for a quote unquote pre-approval subject to the bare trust and property being found and established. So best to have that done before you go on and exchange on a property as well.
Now, other questions that we've seen commonly come up with self-managed super fund is we've also seen people essentially go into asking if buyer's agent fees can come out of that. Now, we can't formally advise, but we can tell you what we've seen many clients do. Many clients have had their buyer's agent's fees paid from their self-managed super fund. And that allows them to get now professional guidance on all angles. A, the strategy of the super and what they do through financial planners. B, you know, the setup of it and making sure it's correct. But then C, professionals to guide you on the actual purchasing journey. So it does truly give you an X factor on all angles that for something that's so important to your future, you're getting professionals on your side as well as part of that fund. Obviously, check that guidance with your own planner and accountant. But this is what we're just reporting on from what we've seen many clients do off the back of their advice with their accountant. So that's a really important piece to look at. Now, there is one more thing that many people miss out, Lee, and you get to deal with it a lot when the lending documents come up. And this is something people forget that they need help with once the documents are in their inbox and they need certain guidance from certain professionals. Are you cool to take people through just what they need to do with solicitors and lawyers and things like that when they do get their legal docs and they need to sign and return them? Because it's a bit different with SMSFs versus people in their personal name.
Yeah, so there's a legal advice documents that need to be cited by a lawyer. The question is, can a conveyancer look at it or does it have to be a lawyer? Well, generally speaking, it should be a lawyer separate from the transaction is what the preference is for most lenders. So engaging a lawyer for that legal advice, what that involves is actually generally about 2 or 3 documents that they would go through and sign off that you've had a discussion around financial advice before looking to borrow through your SMSF. So there's documents provided as part of the loan contracts from the lender So once you've gone unconditionally approved, obviously, like most lenders, they prepare the loan contracts. As part of that loan contract pack, there's these 2 to 3 additional documents that involve sign-off of legal advice, which need to be generally you face-to-face or sometimes over Zoom these days to get those signed off by the legal practitioner and sent back to the lender as part of your as part of the requirements for settlement, in addition to getting a stamped copy of your bear trust and SMSF trust deed. So
That's some really good points, Lee, because what can happen is that it just is good for people's knowledge from 3 angles. One is their logistics. They're going to need to be mindful of things they do that are a little bit different to when you're normally purchasing property.
Yeah, if you're going overseas, for example, you got to consider there's physical meetings or documents to be signed as part of that.
Absolutely. The second thing is costs. Remember, lawyers don't do that for free, so they will charge a little bit of extra because it's their time and their support. So just note that there might have a little bit extra costs involved. And then the third and final thing is also your management of key dates. When you have the logistics, when you have the cost, the next thing is key dates, because typically finance clauses in many areas are around 14 days. You can push them out to 21 if the market environments and the heat is a little bit lower, or if you can make that clear with sales agents a bit of time in advance. So I guess that's key. And then settlements as well. I'm not saying people can't meet 30-day settlements. They can. We've seen it happen. But most tend to push it to 42 to 60 when then supers, just because they want that extra time for all the logistics to take place. And remember, you're not dealing with banks that are the first tier banks that have deep costs in systems and technology and people. You're dealing with second, third, and even sometimes, you know, fourth tier banks as well. And so as a result, I just made up a tier. Yeah.
There's a new tier.
Fourth and fifth tiers. Let's go. You guys know who you are. You know who you are. You charge crazy interest rates, but you show me the money. You make a lending come out somehow, but you're just ridiculous with your rates. So yeah, you third, fourth, fifth, sixth tiers, whatever you want to call them.
I think maybe private lenders could fall under fourth tier.
Yeah, we can call them whatever. But what they do is you need to realize that they don't have big systems, big teams, big processes, big head offices. So they could take longer to get you what you want, and just realize that's the name of the game with self-managed super funds. So yeah, in summary, I think it's really important when you're recapping super to consider some of the things Lee's gone through, because it's been a hot topic. Number 2 is really consider the timing, the logistics, the costs involved. Obviously, start off with advice and the right angle from your financial planner, because for many people, it might not be right for you. The financial planner might look at it and go, hold on a minute, we're going to be okay with your retirement without this. We're going to set it up in different ways, or there's not really the best way here because you have so many properties outside and maybe property isn't the right thing for you. That's all for them to guide you and decide on. But I guess the main thing is we've been hearing it a lot. We've been getting a huge amount of inquiries in this space. Lee is a pro at this and making sure the right people get the right support. And we've been seeing this and fueled a lot of support for clients who obviously feel taking control of their future is important to them. And they want other ways beyond investing personally, and they want to invest in their super. So in summary, if this is sounding like something where you want to consider or have more chats about, it starts on the lending, the capacities and reviews first. So reach out to Lee at lee.pollywall@hillsfinance.com.au. And we've been actually just working on a bit of, you know, transformative environment on how Lee works with helping clients. She's now working with not just herself as a broker, but with panels of brokers that she works closely with. So that way there's no stone unturned, because sometimes when you go to a broker, you have some brokers go, yeah, I've got my panel of lenders, but then some other brokers get a few more, and then other brokers are a few more, or other brokers are well-versed with others. So what Lee's done is she's not only been supporting people, but also now having an environment where she's partnered with the other brokers who specialize in other areas, or are just better and more, I guess, in tune with certain accreditations, with certain banks that they deal with that are different to what Lee deals with. And so this way you get a holistic approach where nothing's unturned. You're getting the best introductions from Lee's side. So yeah, reach out to Lee at lee.pollywall@hillsfinance.com.au for all things self-managed super fund. We thought we'd take a break from the white papers today and we'll jump into a white paper session of research in the next session. And for today, we'd go into self-managed super funds just because it's been popular demand. Lee's been getting smashed with emails. So have I. Our website inquiries, the amount of people asking for things to do with SMSF is huge. It's a clear sign of people taking control and wanting to look into their future. So that's it from us today at the Property Nerds, and hope you enjoyed today's show.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Guests appearing on this podcast may have a commercial relationship with the companies mentioned.
Game over.